Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am a working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the land.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It is, borderline delightful to be with most of you tonight. And so thank you for hanging out on the program. I know it's only like a few seconds in, but this is the time to bail.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to put on airs here. You're faceless, and I don't know whether you hate the program or not. And so, like, maybe you wandered on here accidentally, and you've just realized your mistake, especially if you're an introspective and possibly what do you call the folks who are very they're not introverted.
Mennonites.
Yeah, no, that's not right. Same problem. Hey, yeah. Actually, shame on you, sir. You're not supposed to be using the technology. And I know how it works.
Hey.
Every time I run into a Mennonite, they're skirting the laws of this technology. They're watching somebody else's phone.
Yes.
Or they're using someone else's generator.
Yeah, or in somebody else's van. I never quite understood this. Like, they basically like, look, I don't want to drive this car. I have to go to hell. But you, can you give me a ride?
Yes, sir.
Like, I don't give a rip what happens to you, Bruce.
Yeah, you might as well carry this pemmican with you. Hey, I can eat it later on.
Can you put this steak in the Foreman grill for me? Go ahead. Did God really say? Drive that van.
All right. Okay, so here's what we got going on the show this evening.
You know what the best part about those jokes are?
No.
The likelihood of us losing Mennonite listeners is very low.
Actually, and if one's offended, we have you, sir.
Yeah.
Like, for the same thing we started about.
We were right the whole time.
Okay. Well, first I'm going to tell you what the show's about, and then I'll come back. We're going to do some advice on Dear Life from the Path.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't played in a while. We're going to do Secular versus Solomon.
Yes.
This is America's fastest going internet game show, Unproven. And remember, if you've not heard the program before, if you play the home game, here's how it works. I'm going to give you a proverb, a bit of wisdom. Okay. And you got to tell me where it's from. Here's the thing. We got to figure out where these things are coming from. You got to know its source before you start ascribing to it with your life. Most of the time I get Christians who are like, hey, I follow this. God helps those who help themselves. And then I smack them in the face like a meme Batman and say, listen, sir, the Lord did not say that particular bit.
Yeah.
And so that was Ben Franklin. And that man is nobody's Jesus. And so I just need you to be careful and know where your wisdom's coming from. So I'm going to give you a proverb, a bit of wisdom. And you're going to tell me, is it a from Solomon or a biblical bit of wisdom? And if you know a rough area of what chapter may be, you can venture it. Boova tends to do that
and be wrong and like epically.
Yeah. So you can try that if you want to for bonus points. And or you tell me it's secular, and then I want to know the country of origin. Like, where do you think this wisdom is coming from? What country?
Okay,
so
I feel like I'm going to dominate this game. Because
yeah.
We do have a special guest in tonight, Dawson Schrader. Dawson, how you doing?
I'm doing quite dandy.
Yep. That's up for debate, and we will know if that's true or not by the end of the show. So Dawson was gracious enough to come on the show, fill in for Boova while he's out and about. So Dawson, if I forget before the show was over, appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, thank you. It's
good. Okay, yeah. So we'll see. It is a light crowd here in the studio tonight, so it's going to be a Dawson Mike showdown.
Yeah.
Mike, if you want to go, you can. You don't have to go by Mike, though. For the purposes of the game, what nickname would you like me to use?
Rough Saw.
Like the dog from Ruff Ruffman?
Is his name Rough Saw?
No, it's Ruff Ruffman.
No. Okay, Ruff Ruffman will find. Yeah. Ben Sale, Ruff Ruffman in. Or call me Pocket Snickers. I'm good with that,
no
too.
Way.
Okay. Okay. Dawson versus Pocket Snickers. Okay, I got it. I can handle that. I get my own name. I do not participate in the game because I have the answers. And that just feels, it feels cheating.
Oh, I'll change chairs when it's game time. Otherwise, I can see all the answers.
Okay, yeah, you can't look. Okay, there are a couple interesting articles out there today. I saw one that's it's in quotes, but it's in a single quote. I'm not sure what that's to mean, but three Christian teachings that Jesus didn't teach.
Oh.
What are the things that people are like, yeah, that came, that Ben Franklin thing I said, maybe it's on the list.
Who said pulling yourself up by your bootstraps? Is that a famous quote from somebody?
I don't know. Also not Jesus, though.
Right.
He didn't have boots.
I'll put the internet on it.
They use dirty sandals.
Sounds like a fisherman.
Yes.
It does sound like a fisherman.
Yeah. Even teach a man to fish. That's not
actually, I don't think I own a pair of boots with straps on it. And if I do, they cinch around the top part of the boot to keep water out. You don't pull them up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What kind of boots are these?
Italian leather.
All right.
Okay.
I'll do some research.
All right. Anyway, so we're going to talk about that. Also, there was, what was there? Another one, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what that means. There's all kinds of stupid articles. I'm going to repeat to you, if you listen to the program with any frequency, 95% of Christian media is just a bunch of cackling. Like, it's just gossip. Just, it's got a cross painted on it. And so just, I mean, for the most part, stay out of it. I'm trying to filter through it. But this is why we have sometimes, unless something's going on in the personal situation, some of these articles are just terrible. And so I would encourage you to stay away from that. If you need to kick off a fast or something, that's the type of thing to leave behind.
Okay, hold on. Quick intercession.
Who's this guy?
Two colloquial phrases that I've discovered the origin of in the last 15 seconds.
Okay, let's have it.
One, bootstraps. Mm-hmm. It was originally brought up as a physics problem in an late 1800s textbook. And the physics question was, why can't a man pull himself up by his bootstraps?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
And then it got slowly moved over into a socioeconomic like advancement
Wait, was it, so the science problem was that it's impossible, and instead we turned it into some sort of societal encouragement? Like, hey, why don't you do the impossible?
Yeah, America.
Okay.
And the bootstrap is like, it's that tag in the back by your heel. That's the bootstrap.
Oh.
That's a bootstrap.
Yeah. I'm assuming they were more prominent back in the day. Now they're just there for flair, because no one actually does anything with these, but like... like the thing in the very back of your heel that's just a little tag that you could
put it every time I put on my shoes.
What?
Yep, my finger goes in the hole and I rip it up.
Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
He also has his own engraved shoehorn.
Do you really?
Do not. I don't know where he heard that shoehorn? Information. It's all gossip.
Yeah. That'd been awesome.
You can't believe anything you see on Reddit. That's my fault. I was going to check that out and I didn't. I forgot to ask. Shoehorn, not right. I got seven other questions actually, but we'll follow up after the show. Okay.
Hold on. Second colloquialism.
Okay, hit me.
A hangover.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When
yeah.
people would get a staring drunk.
Yeah.
Right? They were too drunk to walk all the way home. And so like there would be like a building that would just have a rope strung across the building, and so like you'd pay them a little bit of money and then you could just pass out over the rope.
Yeah, you didn't even have to be drunk, actually. It was like a poor man's hotel.
Yes.
If you had nowhere to sleep for the night, you could rent a spot on the rope, and drunkards tend to be the guys on it.
Yes, and that's why they call it a hangover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lay on a rope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but calling a guy a rope layer or... I can't think of a different thing.
I've never called a man that, actually.
He's a real rope player.
Okay. All right. Well, inside, I'll be cautious. My slip of the tongue. I don't want to.
You think there'd be any opportunity for a business like that anymore?
No. Hey, I tell you this. Maybe. Maybe not than the rope. I suppose it depends what it's made out of. But I thought about, we used to work downtown, and I thought if someone were renting out hammocks, for $5 or something for half an hour, I'd totally go pay $5 to go sit in a hammock and take a nap outside in like somewhere downtown. If a guy had like 50 hammocks set up.
Oh boy. I don't know. The other people that would be willing to, like, I just don't know. I think this draws the wrong element.
You think it's not safe? I've been violated.
No, I just don't know if I want to share hammocks
there we go.
With all the people in downtown Des Moines.
Yes. Well, like it might be greasy.
It might be a little greasy. Yeah. I think Dawson's got the tick of this thing.
It is hard to disinfect jute. That's a good point. It's a good point.
Hey, you could start a secondary business making jute disinfectant, and then all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying? You got money.
Somebody's going to grow a tail after all the chemicals I got to put on this thing, and they've been sleeping it. Okay, maybe I didn't think through it very far. I just thought I'd like to sit in a hammock, for heaven's sakes.
I thought, doesn't Japan have like them nap boxes where you give them like $10? And then they put you in some kind of pod for a couple minutes.
It's a tube, like a test tube.
Yes.
I do not understand that
I think it would freak me out. But if they played white noise in there, I'd probably pass out. I could probably sleep. Do you guys sleep with a thing at night? Like, do you have a white noise machine or a fan or something?
No.
Just straight silence?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I hate having little lights in my room, even. Like I try to cover the little lights in my room.
Do you have a legit alarm clock, or do you use your phone as an alarm?
I use my phone as an alarm. Hmm. That, but I usually wake up a few minutes before that, which that's another story.
Yeah. I'm a sound machine plus fan.
I got like my DVD player, which is also a VHS player.
Wow. A 2-for-1 combo.
Oh, yeah.
Money well spent, sir.
Oh, yeah. But it has like a little light for the power button. Why we need a light on if it's off, not sure. But there's a light there, and I'm like, I always want to try set something in front of it.
Wait a minute. Like you haven't followed through on this? Like with a piece of tape or a stuffed animal or a...
Oh, no. There's socks set in front of it.
Okay. Yeah. I got a solution for this.
I need it all dark, then I leave my window open because that's when the light hits me.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you, wait a minute, have you used that VHS player?
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay.
Just the only DVD player we had.
Yeah, right?
DVDs are difficult to try to fall asleep with the DVD running, because it'll finish playing the movie and then go back to the opening thing and just spin.
Yeah.
Well, and play music. If it's the right movie, it'll play music on title screen.
Yeah, no, I remember the kids are always trying to talk me into some kind of Harry Potter marathon. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, whatever the movie is, there's one where they get on the night bus. You know which one I'm talking about?
Hmm. Ooh.
Yeah. It's like,
it's got the talking shrunken head in the thing.
I'm just trying to think which episode that is.
That's the opening of the DVD thing. Something, I don't do a good impression of the voice. Something night bus. But anyway, that thing probably spun for 4 hours because I fell asleep while the movie was running, and then it went back to that thing and just kept these big noises and this bus going back and forth. And like, I was just too tired to go fix it. So I just tolerated it, and it was terrible.
Did it influence your dreams at all?
No, I don't think so.
Interesting.
No.
I used to do that. As a kid, I would sleep on a top bunk when I was sleeping with my brother, but there would be no reason ever until the morning I would get down from my bunk.
Yeah.
Even if the movie that we turned on to fall asleep kept going.
Yeah.
So that'd be nice if we watched the SpongeBob movie, and after all you hear is the bum, ba, bum, ba, boom. And I would have to learn to sleep with that, because there's no way I'm getting down.
Because I ain't moving.
Yeah. Nope. I am in bed, and I'm ready for bed. I'm not moving.
Yeah. I don't know what it would take for me. Well, actually, I'm a married man, so if a decision has been reached by one party that someone needs to go check anything out, that's what I would get out of bed for. But other than that, I'll let just about anything go.
Yeah.
I can't. I mean, I've heard. Have you guys ever heard like foxes in the middle of the night? It sounds like someone's being murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
Right when a fox is out there screaming.
Yeah.
And I think I heard that when I first moved out to the country. I was like, "There's someone being killed down the way." I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? Sounds like they about done.
It's too late.
That's terrible.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, I am kind of curious. Hit us up on the old Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. Do you have something unique about your sleeping habits? Mm. Like sound machine, waves, you got to have the TV on. You got to have it pitch like a prison. You got to do like Dawson does the prison situation.
Yeah.
Do
you bring like a extra pair of socks to the hotel when you stay out of town? Cause you're like, I'm gonna cover up everything in here.
No. I just put a pillow over.
Why didn't you just, take a Sharpie to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need better friends. That was a rudimentary idea.
I do not need a light to tell me if my DVD player is on.
We're getting away from the matter. Okay. The matter is,
here's what I know.
Toshiba is out to get me.
I had Boova stay at my house, and you'd think he was constructing the Higgs boson. You know what I'm saying? Like he shows up with like fans. He's like, I gotta have a cattle fan on. I mean, it looks like we're cooling down the half the fair.
Actually, we went on a work trip one time, and we had different. I remember, like, he brought a giant fan with him, like a whole fan. Now, like, I run the fan at the hotel for sleep. Like, it helps me sleep to just have the full blast, letting the fan, the room fan go. But like, he brought his own, fan.
Yeah, it looks like he's gonna collide particles in there.
Yeah,
he's got a whole apparatus.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Boova, it's 515-517-0085. Call or text. Listen, are you still behaving this way now that you're a married man?
Yeah.
You have this giant fan in your room, and how does your wife tolerate it? Hit us up on the Life and Path complaint line, Boova. We'd love to hear from you. All right, here we go. Three Christian teachings that Jesus didn't teach. Let's see if I agree with these.
Okay.
There's been a wave of assorted memes and photos on Facebook created around the Timothy Bible verse. For the time is coming when people will not put up with sound doctrine and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander away to myths. Mm. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. One is a shot of the verse on a well-marked Bible. I don't care about any of this. The comments, blah, 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 are more interesting. I don't care about that either. All right. As far as that goes, we in the Christian community have turned away from the truth and wandered into myths for years. Yeah, that's true. I always, maybe we talked about this on the show recently, but I can't remember. We were having a conversation around. People are like, oh, it's getting worse.
Oh, yeah.
People are like, Christian persecution, for one. I don't want to say, like, there's people who, just for saying they love and follow Jesus, are losing their lives. It's bad, for sure.
And true.
Yes, true. That it is actively happening. In places where, like, you don't really see it. It's not, like, happening in America, for the most part. But, like, certainly, there's parts of the country. I know in many pastors or missionary friends who, like, are part of this. They're close to this. This is actively happening. But to say that it's, like, worse than it's ever been is just simply not true. Like, Christians were, you know, in the time what Nero used Christians to light his garden at night, would light them on fire and just let them burn to light his garden. There are Christians who were tortured, even, like, within the 100 years of that, where, like, if you admitted to being a Christian, they might put you in a sack with, like, I can't remember. It's like a cat and a fox and something else, and then just throw it all into the river. Like, that's bad. It's a bad way to go. And so, like, there is something about people. It's. I'm going to say this oddly, but then maybe I can correct it. People look on their own lives very nostalgically, and they're like, whatever it is, how I remember life being when I was young, it has gotten worse. Just, like, from whatever perspective, like, people are harsher, or, like, the world is getting worse, or, like, whatever true values I had when I was young, I think the world is deteriorating.
Yeah.
And, like, it can be bad without being, like, hey, things have gotten worse, because, like, your perspective is limited to your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And not only just, like, over time, but, like, over parts of the country. So, like, you get this from what I would consider to be a bad doctrine related to Christianity on, like, hey, the end of the world will be preceded by tribulation. Well, most people judge tribulation as to whether it's happening here, like in Florida or something like that. Oh, we're not seeing much tribulation. It must not be, I don't know, the end of the world. When, like, I don't know, there's plenty of places in the world where they've had tribulation.
Where there's earthquake and famines, yes, and people dying. And, like, you're like, the end of the world can't be. We're living the high life. I'm like, ask the people in Pakistan.
It's too narrow. It's
rough
homie.
Living.
Too narrow. Like, you can't judge the world by your own front door. And so anyway, it's just, it's the caution. Okay, here we go. The Bible teaches us to obey. Who wouldn't believe? Oh, sorry. The Bible teaches us to obey authority. This is one Christian teachings that Jesus didn't teach. Who wouldn't believe this one? Given that significant evangelists with political and corporate ties keep repeating it. Okay. Romans 13, Titus 3, Hebrews 13, and 1 Peter 2 are a few of the favorites. Some people have managed to twist Ephesians 6:2, honor your father and mother, into a New Testament command to honor, follow, submit to, and pay obeisance to all authority. Before genuflecting with our foreheads to the ground, it's worth exploring the meaning of the word authority. Secondly, common sense interprets the idea that we avoid problems by not agitating the rulers. We submit, not because it is a joy to do so, but because we're less likely to incur the attention and wrath of a system designed to subdue and subjugate. What the heck is this guy on?
I can't understand anything you're saying right now.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, he's the contention is, does the Bible teach you to obey authority?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it does. His contention, their contention? I didn't read. Seems to be that, like, does it mean, hey, whatever someone says, I automatically do and treat them as a moral authority? No, it doesn't mean that. Respect for somebody does not mean agreement. It does not mean that I do everything they always tell me to do. It's a recognition of responsibility more than anything.
Respect is very different than obey.
Yes.
Yeah. And, like, but even Paul would say, hey, like, there is an obedience to your authorities. And actually, I mean, the posturing of America would be this too, is we'd say, look, if you don't like the laws, you got to change the laws, but you don't get to just pick and choose which laws you disobey. You can't just go, I think the speed limit should be 80, so I'm going to go 80. Because, like, that is the foundation of chaos.
Yeah.
Is, like, everyone who does what's right in their own eyes, you have a very wide interpretation of what's right in your own eyes. And so, but where America is at least situated better is, like, the people do have the ability to influence the changing of those laws, when if you're talking about a more hierarchical or monarchical system, like, you can't, nobody cares what you think. Mm. So I think Paul is saying, like, that in service for Christ, this is from Romans, if just because you serve Jesus does not give you a encouragement to then completely disregard the laws of the land around you. So for Christians, that became very delicate because at times there was an expectation like, do you show honor to the emperor? Yes, we like Christian, early Christians would recognize that the emperor is the authority in the Roman Empire. Would they make sacrifices to the empire? No, they would not do that. And many Christians lost their heads because of it, because they refused to do that. And so even at the time, Jewish folks said, hey, what if we like, or the Christians would say, what if we said on the emperor's behalf, like, we'll go and pray, but we'll pray for the emperor. We just won't pray to the emperor. Deal? And and Rome was like, well, okay, seems all right. Like, I think we can agree.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And so and I think this is very this is subversive, and I think difficult at times, actually, if you look back from some of the New Testament writers, because what people often want is for God to go just blow up the whole thing. Just blow it all up and do it all differently. And God doesn't generally do that. He's like, look, this is the way which humans understand each other. It's how they understand how they interact. Like, and there's a certain amount of like asking that like God take over puppeting the whole world. And he's not done that. Like, God has given people the choice. He's like,
that's right. Because he would basically be withdrawing free will.
Yes.
And like with free will does come some chaos and does come some bad choices.
Yes.
And for God to not allow that, like, he would also be not allowing genuine love.
Yes.
And so he's not going to pull that out.
Yes, that's correct. And so what's interesting then is like, we actually, one of the hardest parts, I think, at times to walk through is in the book of Philemon. It's just like one chapter, and it's about a guy who's the slave has run away. And it was a debt slavery. Again, you got to be careful in Bible slavery, and even slavery of the Near East is not the same thing as we think about like 19th century Civil War slavery. It's not, it's debt slavery. So, I mean, you got there because you owed and couldn't pay. So you worked it off. It's not great. And it doesn't mean everyone treated each other the same, but it's not the same thing as like stealing someone from their land. It wasn't that. But anyway, What we want is for the writer, for Paul to write to the guy and go, hey, just set the slave, or to the slave and go, like, just be free. Just be completely free. And Paul doesn't do that. He goes, hey, you should go back and you work off the thing you're supposed to work off. And, like, you honor the person who is your master. And the what then happens then is he ends up talking to the guy who owns the slave, and he's like, look, I don't want you to just set him free and send him away. I actually want the bigger thing, which is like you accept him back as a brother. That's different. Like, one is the thing with the, like, how do we navigate the laws of the land from like a societal perspective? And then Paul was after the bigger thing. He's like, I don't want you to just like me to say, set your slave free and that solves the problem. He's like, that would be great for the guy and you could relieve his debt. But actually, I want the 10 steps further than that. I want you to look at this man as if he's your equal. I want you to look at that man as if he's your brother. And then you couldn't possibly enslave him. You wouldn't even think about continuing to do it. And like, that's what the letter focuses on. And it takes a lot of heat because people are real pissed about
it. People are like, hey, he didn't condone slavery.
Yeah, I wanted him to condone slavery. And Paul's like, I mean, if you were to ask, so if Paul, the Apostle Paul's sitting right here, he would say, well, of course. But he didn't say the of course thing. He said the thing that actually changes your heart so you don't look at another human like that.
Yeah.
Right? And it gets back to like some of, if you think about even how God, so when the, when Abraham's lineage, Israelites, go into this land and they get all their different parts and pieces. And they've got this, this jubilee. So you can buy and sell your land. You can kind of carve it up. You get into debt. You sell, you like figure it out or whatever. And then every 70 years, the table resets.
50 years.
49. Yes, 50. You're right. So like it resets. And like this is God built this in to say, yeah, people are going to have struggles. And you got to be able to pay your bills. And like you're going to have feasts, famines and all this kind of thing. But then at the end of the time, all the land goes back to the original holders of the original families because you have to have a way to make a living. You have to have a way to feed yourself. And we're not going to end up in this situation where you've got like three primary landowners and all these other people who
like
can't
the
survive.
Have and the have nots.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so like God actually built the situation where he's like, yes, I like temporal or temporary like things will require this recarving up of this land that produces for people to survive. But it cannot be that way permanently. And it gets reshuffled and distributed back out. And so people bought and sold with that. They're like, I don't know, I'm about 3 years away from a jubilee, so I'm not going to pay you the full worth of the land because I know I only get to keep it for 3 years or something like that. But the point is that there's a normalization to it. You don't start looking at people who are in your way of taking land that you may then capitalize on and be your empire. You recognize it as temporary means of solving temporary problems, but that like everyone had, like there's an equity to the opportunity for people to have their land back and otherwise go back after it. So anyway, I say all that to say, when we go back to this authority thing, like, do you obey the people that are in charge in your governments? Yeah.
I think,
yeah, you do need to do that.
I think where I've noticed like a lot of people struggle with this is like, they want to both usurp authority and then not pay the consequences for it. Right.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King Jr. was pretty classic for this, in the opposite realm.
Yeah.
Right. Like that dude got arrested all the time. He's out there doing marches and like he's preaching and he's out there just like yelling God's word, asking for equal rights. And then they'd come to arrest him and he'd be like, fair enough. And then hands go back and then he goes and they haul and he writes letters from the Birmingham jail.
Birmingham jail, yep.
And like that is so good if you haven't read it, by the way.
That's great.
But like nowadays, and like this comes from a Western culture thing a lot, is like we're like, we'll go out and protest. Or we'll go out and get a bunch of signs out, or we'll block somebody from doing something, and then we're just incensed that we got arrested. I'm like, you broke the law.
Yeah.
Like, and you should have been well aware of that. And went like when the authorities showed up and said, cease and desist, you're blocking this, you should have put your hands behind your back and went to jail.
Yeah.
Because that's what you did. You broke the law. And so like you should pick it. You should like charge against things. You should, like, somebody was talking about this last week and it was confusing to me a little bit because like someone had done something that like they deserve jail time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like we were talking about it and somebody was talking about it. And anyway, they're like, we're praying that he doesn't go to jail. And I'm like, I pray that he does actually. Like he broke the law. Like, you know what I'm saying? And like, and so like, it seems some of this is odd. Like we want to do the big thing or the rebellious thing and not expect the consequences. Now, I'll give you a quick example from work. Right, one of the tenets of the place that I work is you have to make impact in things. Mm-hmm. Right, they want you to like to shout from the rooftops all the great things that you've done. And fundamentally, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a thing. Like both within my personality and like God says, like let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Like, I'm not going to get a hold of 75 people and tell them what I did.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do the thing I'm supposed to do. But I know, like, inherently, like, when review time comes up, that affects me negatively.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with those consequences.
Yeah.
People will succeed doing far less than I do because they are willing to do that. And I'm flat out just not willing to do it. And so I'm like, if I eventually, like, lose my job because my performances aren't what they should be because I refuse to participate in some kind of self-aggrandizement scheme, right? I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like I will take those consequences, but like it would be ridiculous for me to go like, I didn't do what you asked me to do. And I can't believe these are the consequences. I can definitely believe those are the consequences. You said those were the consequences. And that's where authority starts to come in, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
like
yeah.
When authority says, this is what happens. Like as long as they don't start messing with the way that like God said, this is what I expect out of my people. You're going to follow me and you're going to act a certain way. So you're bringing light into a world and you're going to reflect my goodness, right? And as long as you don't make me stop doing that, then I will pay your taxes.
Yeah. It makes me think of, have you guys seen Hacksaw Ridge?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good movie.
It's that, right? Like the guy goes, look, I'm not, he didn't believe, he's a Quaker. I don't believe in killing mm-hmm. people, but like I still will serve my country and here's how I'm going to do it. Like that.
Yes.
It's subversive. It's subversive in the way Jesus is subversive. Jesus is subversive in service. He's a subversive in like, he knew he was causing trouble with the Jewish authorities. He knew it was going to be a problem with the Roman ruler and he accepted all the consequences in it.
Yes.
And so like, yeah. So like there's not an obedience, like, obviously you're going to choose whatever Jesus is telling you to do. You're going to do that, but you're not going to grouse about the impact of a world that's got laws that like Jesus is not the president here. He's not your mayor. He's not your lawmaker. And so like all the stuff's not going to look like you want it to look. It's perfectly right to try to change those types of things, but you do need to stay within them. And frankly, a lot of like it mattered. The example matters within the confines. So like that, the example of the Hacksaw Ridge guy never gets shown if he just goes, look, I just won't fight. Or like, I just won't show up to the army then.
Yeah.
Like,
you're not going to let me do, I'm just going to bail completely.
Right. Right. So like it's sometimes like it's more impactful because of the contrast. I'll go anyway.
Yeah.
I'll, you know, like, I will do everything in my power to do the thing that you're asking me to do. Here's what I won't do, but I'm willing to sacrifice myself, my time, my money, my whatever, in trying to adhere to the thing that that is the
that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, I just be careful. This person's on a little bit of a rant. I think it's more nuanced than what they're making it sound like. Okay. If who believes this? Number two, if you pray it, then God's got to do it. Okay. Well-known prosperity preachers are not the only ones who latch onto this concept, finding, speaking, declaring, announcing, and claiming promises lifted from Scripture as if no one prior to this, including God, realized that they were there. And because it's a promise, we tell God, you promised, you've got to come through. God, who didn't foresee this loophole, is thereby forced to comply.
I know no one that thinks this.
I don't either.
I'm trying to think through that a little bit. Like, some of the harder things to do within the Bible is to know which promises belong to you, mm-hmm. and which ones belong to somebody in a historical context of which they were given, right? Like when God is speaking to a group of people mm-hmm. and says, I will save you, or you can do all things, like whatever. And so like all of these things are good evidence of God's character, that he does have a saving heart, or he does have a mighty right hand, and he does care about the hairs on the head of his people. And all those things, I think, are completely fine for understanding who the God you're dealing with. But if you feel like you got him in a barrel because you really like circus, and like he has to let you be a circus ringmaster because you really want it and you asked him about it, you're misunderstanding the way that this operates, you know?
Circus stick together.
He's not a genie. You can't be asking for three wishes.
Exactly. Right. And the thing is like God is this is going to sound, I'm trying to make sure I'm phrasing this right, but like God doesn't change. He will always act in his own character. So like, and I think we were talking about this earlier today. We were talking about a guy that like is like, hey, I want to help start an orphanage. Let me take $100 to the casino and then we will have $1 million and then we can start the orphanage, right? And like, that's not a reflection of God's character. The helping with the orphanage thing sure is, but the way that you got there, like God is not just a means or an ends guy, right? He cares about the way the means got you there, because it all has to be laced with his integrity and his goodness and his presence. And so like just being like, this is why like people will beg God to tell them an answer and he won't. Because our general stance is, if God would tell us the thing that he's doing, we would try to run and beat him there mm-hmm. and not get there in the way of which he designed it to work out for his glory and our joy. Right. We would be like, God, if God were to tell you when you're 20 years old, hey, you will eventually be running an orphanage in Pakistan.
Yeah.
We would be like at 21, we would be like, I got to sell everything and head to Pakistan. And God's like, actually, the way I was going to do this, you would have gotten there when you were 45 and you would have had enough money because I blessed you in a way to walk right over there and actually do the good instead of going over there and getting shot in the middle of a civil war because you hauled up and decided to do it on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, following Jesus is almost completely means. You almost don't ever orchestrate the ends. Like this is where like most of the things, like if you look at the letters in the New Testament, like where somebody is writing to a church somewhere to encourage them, like James is doing it, Paul is doing it, Peter's doing it. They're focusing a lot on personal behavior, not because they're like a schoolmaster trying to rap you on the fingers. They're like, here's what you can control, my man. And like how you do something matters more than like the thing that actually got done. Because the reality is like, I actually don't control other people. I can only control the things that are within my hands and feet and eyebrows and elbows of like how I can influence the world around me. But like how you do those things mattered. Humility in people, like helping people make peace, how you speak to your spouse, how you speak to your kids, how you serve your friends, how you serve your community. Like these are the things that build up a life that follows Jesus. And your attempt to go to like accomplish an end and then go, look, God, are you happy? He's like, no, you stamped on everybody's face to get there.
No, I am not happy.
I'm not impressed with it. And like it right sizes us a little bit where like we don't have to contrive. I don't have to plot to think what will make God happy with me. One, he's already done all the stuff to reconcile. Like I don't have to do anything to like pay off a debt. He took care of that. He made it possible for me to otherwise be in a relationship with him. And then from there, he's like, here's what I created good for. Here's what good looks like. I wrote it down. I made it clear. You don't have to guess. Here's what it looks like to follow me, and you're like, your life will align to my character if you do this. And so you don't have to plot the big thing. You just have to be faithful in the small things, which is like, if you think of it from a broader life philosophy, even outside of like Christianity, like if you live, you need to recognize you live your life like you live your days. That's all it is. You've got a series of days that add up to the life that it produces. And so every second to every minute to every hour to every day. All those things add up and they produce your life. And so you can either try to like chess master like the thing and put it all together, or you can go, if I am faithful in all these things, it will produce a life of faithfulness. If I'm kind, if I'm generous, if I'm in service to people, if I'm humble, like if all those things are true, then that will be the output of my life, regardless of which direction it goes, regardless of who I'm in relationship with, regardless of what job I have. And then frankly, you don't get so caught up on all those different things. There's all kinds of people. Christians are kind of good at this kind of thing. And they're like, hey, I got fired from my job. Okay. Like, yeah. Oh, okay. Right. And then you end up in another thing and they're like, they're still, it takes a while, but like, you're still happy. Like you're still at peace. It didn't shake your whole world because like, I can be faithful sweeping the floor for sure. Oh, I can be faithful doing this thing that's got a lot of influence in the world. That's great. But I can also be faithful over here. You don't get so tied up in all of the, what it feels like, kind of the worldly measures of whether you have a good life or not. Like, because at your bones, you did your very best to walk faithfully in the little things that were in front of you.
Dawson, do you feel like you've seen this, like people who are trying to use God as like a genie?
I feel like I have in times past where people are like, well, I prayed for this to happen. How come it didn't get there?
Yeah.
How come I didn't make it? How come I didn't get the part? How come I didn't get the job? How come the things I prayed for didn't happen?
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe they will just.
Yeah. Or maybe like this is where it starts to get gray a little bit, right? Because you're like there's like you'll start to put levels of things. Like, these are the things I pray on. God, should I move to Ohio? God, should I try for this job? God, should we have kids? God, should I go to this college? Like, you're like, these are things that God is definitely interested in. And then we try to pull them out of things like, should I take a left here or should I just go straight? Both routes seem to be acceptable according to Apple. You know what I'm saying? And like, there's a part of our design that goes, well, God gave you a brain. It's okay to use it, right? It doesn't have to be a holy, set apart, sanctified route to get to the Walmart today.
Yeah.
You could just go the regular route and it should be
God
fine.
Is there for guidance if you need it.
That's like, right. And like, but there are times when he will step into your everyday. And so the thing is like being available and open to the things that God will be doing. And it will show up in all kinds of weird places. It will show up in your Bible reading that day. Or it'll show up on like some prayer where like if you give God the chance to speak, or sit in silence awkwardly, whichever one you're good at, right? Like, I have probably heard like what I felt like was God leading me direction, mostly because by the time I heard a thing, I'm like, first of all, I don't even know what that means. Second of all, there's no reason I would have ever thought of that on my own.
Yeah.
And so like, and I actually don't want to do it. And so like these three things sound like everything that God would be asking me to do. And so instead of going X today, I go Y today. And I'm willing to flush it out because this is kind of fun. I feel like a gambler a little bit. You know, like if I feel like God is asking me to do something, but I'm not sure it's him, I'm like, let's roll the dice.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. Let's see what happens. Maybe I'm wrong and I took a 20-minute detour I didn't need to take. Or maybe this is God trying to get me to do a thing. And like, I have the most interesting conversation with a guy I never would have met. I've had both. I've had it shake out one way and I've had it shake out the other. And I find it to be extremely exciting when I think God is sending me on some kind of goose hunt to do something cool.
How many goose hunts do you go on a weekend?
I go never on my regular goose hunts, but at least two.
It is a caution, maybe, like in saying that, of course, it's the wrong posturing. It goes back to that Philemon example. Is it like, I want you to see him as a brother. Like if you feel like you've got one over on God, like you've misunderstood the relationship anyway. Like you just, it's the wrong posturing. But if you just think of him as a good father. And like, not everybody had a good father. And so it's hard. It's actually hard to conceive that this is like, what does it look like to have a kind, nurturing someone who like you're not going to disappoint for having asked something. But like, I got four kids, and I like to think of the young ones when I think of this because they're more innocent. The older ones might be trying to twist me over something. But like, they're like, Dad, can I have a pony? And like, I'm not mad that the kid asked for a pony. I'm like, that's a cool thing to ask for, man. We're not going to do that for all kinds of really good reasons.
But ponies are awesome.
Yeah, like I agree. I know why you're asking, and I'm not mad that you would ask it. And I want you to ask every time. I want you to go, Dad, I'm still thinking about that pony. I love it, man. I do. But like, if I were to give my 6-year-old kid a pony, the pony would die. And my kid would feel responsible because they were responsible because they neglected the pony. And the pony would trash the house and crap everywhere. And so, like, I'm not going to do that. And they're like, why does God? And so, like, even as adults, though, we do the same thing, but we do it more reasonably. We're like, to your point, we start figuring out, like, what does God care about? What does he not care about? I don't know, man. Like, I like to hear all the stuff. And so just like actually we come to this show on a Monday night and there's 3-4 dudes in here and they're talking about all kinds of stuff. And I care about all of it, really. I may not have do anything about it. It may not change their situations around them. But like, it's the same reason I pray for anything. I was like, I'm not always asking like as if I know the best thing to happen. So I'm going to tell God what to do. There's an arrogance to that a little bit. But it's okay to say, God, here's what I think. Here's what I want. Here's the thing that's stirring my heart at the moment. Here's the thing that seems exciting. I'm asking, like, I am orienting my body and my heart and my mind to saying, like, if it's the right thing, I'm asking, yes. Like,
what do you think, Dad?
Yeah. What do you think? Tell me.
Yeah.
Like, show me, help me see, like, if this is not the right decision for me or for my family, make it clear. Because like right now it feels like it's pretty good. And I don't like, I have a limited scope in the world. Or if you don't really care either way, like do whatever makes me happy and this is great, then like, hey, yeah. I don't know, take the other two resumes off the shelf and let me get this one. Like, here's it. So like, it's more of, it's orienting your prayer, like a healthy relationship with a very loving parent, more so than can I put my quarter in and ask that God do this thing?
Yeah.
And so like, but once you get the relationship stuff right, then actually like you start to recognize, you remember when Jesus says like, my people will hear my voice. Like you actually do start hearing things every once in a while. You start noticing something highlight from when you're reading scripture. You start, when you're praying, like I know I told this story on the show a week or so ago, but like I walk in the dog and like I was just praying and not on anything super grand or anything. And it was, and the response that it felt, we didn't hear like a God voice, but like the phrase that popped in my mind was like, once you're done following yourself, you can follow me. And it wasn't like God wasn't pissed or mad at me or anything, but like it was convicting in a very good way. I thought I would not have, we were talking this just before the show started. Sometimes you just need like a reckoning. And so, yeah. So I looked at my life and like, whatever, I pastor a church. I run I host a Christian radio show. My life is oriented towards following and serving Jesus. But like after that thing pops into my mind, I just start thinking about various things in my life. And I'm like, yeah, I don't even know if I gave God any space in any of these things. I'm like, well, I like this thing and I'm kind of doing this thing. And not like, I'm not like kicking puppies or cheating on my wife or anything, but like, is my life oriented to God? Whatever you got, I'm in. Not everywhere and not in the way that it always should be. And so I'm like, thank you. Thank you for, and like, it was just such a very cool in my mind to trade off for me to have to think about that. And I said, okay, well, let's line them up. Let me figure out where I chose me. And I didn't choose the things that were of you. And let me get that oriented. I'm like, yeah. Thanks, Dad. Like,
yeah.
It was great.
And, yeah, and it's like a father figure. Like, your father isn't going to sit down and tell you how to play with your toys.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to give you all the toys, give you the world for you to be playing with your toys and doing whatever you want with them. Of course, he'd prefer you not smash them into pieces.
Yeah.
And you say, make them fight each other.
Dad, I'm going to put them in the light socket. Dad goes,
maybe let's we not, should steer you in a different direction. And he's like, oh, look, they're getting mayor air. Like, you're building something great, like a cool house or something. Like, and then you're just asking for that approval.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and I think maybe that's the, maybe the tough part. And it depends on, usually it hinges on earthly dad relationships, right? Because like, you're like, you're like, Dad, what do you think? And like, there's no part of him that ever goes, I don't like you, right? I'm disappointed in you. I want you to get away from me, right? Never is that his response. Now, his response could be corrective, But like, mm-hmm. it's a, there's something about even a harsh correction that comes from a loving dad that you're like, he really meant it this time.
Oh, totally.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can tell when your old man's like, he's kind of hurt. And so he's like he's amped a little bit. He's not like mm-hmm. apathetic to you and just giving you like this blind rule-based whatever. He's like, son, no. Yeah. And like, you can hear this in his voice.
Well, you would want it. Like, I don't, you got a kid reaching for the stove. Like, you go, like, dude, you grab the hand and you go, you're going to hurt yourself. And like, there's people's behaviors where, like, not only are you going to hurt yourself, but you're going to hurt other people. And so, no, of course, you, because that's the other thing. God actually does care about this. This is why, like, even the faithfulness of the means as an example, because, like, think of how many vast majority of people that walked away from Jesus didn't walk away from Jesus. They walked away from the church. They saw some Christians behaving in some way or another, and they go, God sucks.
Yes.
Because look at that. Based upon that, I think God's crappy. And so this is where, like, you know, your life matters, even just, again, not just like, hey, does he follow the rules or not? Like, it's amateur hour. That, like, you're playing with too small a stakes. God's like, I'm trying to help. It's the same when he looks at the Israelites and say, look, you're to be a light to the Gentiles. I expect, like, when my people are serving and loving and caring and fighting for justice and fighting for true and good things into the world, they do that so that people understand me. Fallibly, of course. But, like, they understand God. Like, and you see this where, like, in service to we just bought, I don't know, we don't talk about this on the air very much, but, like, we're trying to help with some folks in Pakistan. There are folks in some debt slavery. They end up in brickyards in Pakistan. And so the way to get them out, and they're almost exclusively Christians, because you can't do debt slavery in Pakistan with a Muslim. The Muslims own the brickyards, and so you can't enslave another Muslim, but you can enslave a Christian. And so these brickyards are full of Christians who owe money that they, like, it's like the coal mine of days gone by. Like, yeah. You can never make enough money to pay off your debt. And so anyway, like, every once in a while, God has just blessed various folks from the show where we can just pay off debts and we can help people kind of get out of the thing. That's great. And then I think there was we helped a family. It was a lady and her son. The son's, I think, 25, maybe 30. But like he'd never not been in that brickyard. His mom had been in that slavery. The dad had died. They just had no way to pay it off. And so we got him out of there. And then it was like 2 or 3 months later, our friend in Pakistan goes like, hey, is there any chance we could help them with a bed? Like, they don't have they're sleeping on the floor. I'm like, well, yeah, totally. And so, like, we figured out and we found some beds. We got them each a bed, and they just got it over this last weekend. And, like, the joy on their faces. But here's what they didn't do. They're like, oh, thank you, Brother Ben. This is for me. But, like, everybody recognizes that, like God is responsible. Why am I sending money to Pakistan? Not because I just thought of it. Like, God interacted and got me in touch with a guy in Pakistan. I don't know why. I make more money than I should, probably. And I have it to be able to buy a bed. And so, like, all of these things, I don't go, hey, look, we're awesome. Or the guy who went and bought the bed. Like, I think he's a good guy. But, like, at the end of the day, everybody in this equation goes, dude, what a cool thing we got to be a part of.
Yes.
Like, and for these guys, like, we Westerners, Americans particularly, are like, when the Bible's got elements of, like, freedom and peace and things, these are abstract. Because we subsist on our own money, on our own commodities, right? But to these guys, they're like, the words that God has said have come true physically in my life through the hands of his people, which is exactly how it's supposed to be done, right? They don't expect God to show up and light rays and cash to start flowing out of the thing. They have every expectation that faithful people who love Jesus will do the faithful things that Jesus does here on the earth. And so this is like, they're very, very grateful, but they're like, see, God keeps his promises.
Yeah, the end result is God keeps his promises.
That's right. And because, here's the thing, this goes back to me walking the dog, God going like, well, you're gonna stop, when you're ready to stop following yourself, you can follow me. But like, how much of my life is oriented or understood through the lens of what I can personally control?
Right, like, because you can provide your own food, you I can do. Provide mm-hmm. your own shelter.
That's right.
Right, like you could, there's, you're really making decisions based on comfort. You know what I'm saying? And like, that's Western society. That's not just you being a turd, right? Like, yes. That's us as a whole. Even our poor people, like, even us growing up, like, we're rich.
We're doing great.
In a third world country. Like, I'm like, yeah. I have shoes that are 3 years old. And this kid's like, what are shoes? You know what I'm saying? And so, like, yeah. We even misunderstand our own place. And so you're right. Like the Bible, think about that. Like, the Bible reads differently to different societies and different groups of people, yeah. Where we're like peace and freedom and joy. And we're like, this should mean my boss won't yell at me. And like, this guy's like, I would do anything for a job. Yeah. Like, I would literally cut off my foot to be able to support my family in a responsible way, you know? And like, Western society struggles with this so much because we don't struggle with much.
Yeah, but I think the risk then is to go, well, what am I supposed to do? Go live like that guy? Your poverty is not holy. Just like your wealth is not implicitly a blessing from God. As a matter of fact, a lot of the worst things we do to each other and inside our own souls has to do with we have the flexibility to do it. We've got the money to do it. We've got the time to do it. Like, we do a lot of harm to ourselves and other people. Things we buy, things we interact with, it's bad.
Timu.
Right. Yeah. But yeah. No, Americans spend more on porn than almost anything else.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. And so, like, so you've got your wealth is not implicitly a blessing from God, nor is your poverty something to be like, see, God, I impoverished myself so that now everyone else has to do something.
And he's like, why? I gave you all this money to help people.
This is what I'm saying. And so, like, this is where humans get into this balls and strikes business. Look, that guy's got three nice cars. He must not be following the Lord. Shut up. And or that guy's poor. God must have done that to him. You don't know none of these things. Like, knock it off. But look at your own hands, look at your own wallet, like look at your own time and go again, have I oriented my life to my own set of values or am I oriented my life to the God who goes, I created you. I know what good looks like. And in some ways, what good looks like is contentious to how your society functions in multiple ways. But I'm telling you, I created you. I know what good looks like. Walk in that. And then I go, sure, I don't. Like, yes, I have, I got a bonus from work. Pakistani
bonus.
But here's the thing. The reason we don't talk about this, like, I'm not asking for someone to go, hey, good job. I think nothing of this. It feels very, very blessed to know this random man in Pakistan. I don't even remember how we got a hold of each other. The blessing is to me. Blessing is to me that I get to be part of the work that Jesus is doing in a very tangible way that doesn't always exist everywhere. And so, like, lest people misunderstand. It's not like we're not advertising for this reason. Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking that, like, even because we used to do this, right? Like, we used to hang out at a lot of homeless camps and, like, we'd deliver a bunch of stuff. And, like, the amount of times they're like, oh, no, thank you. This thing that you brought, like, are these battery-powered flashlights? We like the rechargeable ones. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. My bad. You know, my bad. And, like, we're like that, right? Like, that's not hanging a black hat on the homeless community. That's hanging a black hat on society who is so used to walking in political freedom and in financial freedom that you get to make the distinction of whether the name brand Frosted Flakes that someone donated are not good enough for you because you're a Honey Bunches of Oats guy.
Yeah.
And like, if you're going to come stay at this shelter or you're going to come to this hotel, you deserve better. And like, you do not. You do not.
Yeah. All right. I will say, actually, just before we leave that note, like, let's do more can openers. You guys are turning a lot of cans to the homeless and very few can openers. I know we've switched to the pop tops. I'm just saying, just for every 10 cans, just pitch a 10 can opener in there.
Actually, that was very obvious when they would do can drives that no one actually thought about where they were going. They're just like, we've had these beans for too long. I can remember buying these 3 years ago and my family hates them. And like, when you could tell the people, like, this is generally the Jesus people, is they're like, why would I give somebody a can of beans that I don't want?
Yeah, right.
You know what moves at my house? Corn. We can't keep it in stock. So they go buy six things of corn.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, this goes over like hotcakes at the Foost House. The homeless people will definitely love it, you know? But instead, people are cleaning out their water chestnuts that people are like, everybody hates these. And so the homeless people are stuck with 15 cans of water chestnuts and no can opener.
Yeah.
Like, you could just give them the finger and move on. That was all the good you did.
Yep. All right. I don't care about the last
thing. Yeah, it's dumb. We're moving on.
We're going to skip it. So we're going to move on. I don't know. There's a lot of variety in there. Let us know your feedback on Life from the Path. Bob Eisner, complaint line 515-517-0085. Call or text. Now, I want you to get comfortable. I mean, shimmy those two cheeks into that chair. settle on in, because you're getting ready to participate in America's fastest growing internet game show. Hold on, I'm trying to make sure the media works like it's supposed to, secular, or I'm going to show it to you so you can all see that I'm not doing it well. Look at, it's obvious. Look at, there's the thing. There's these fellas right here. They're going to play and do the thing that I said. And nope, there's no, hold on. Think about it.
Yikes.
Thinking.
Doggone it. I can usually cover up with this better, but we're having some technical difficulties that actually are not obvious.
Like you don't know what's causing it.
Yeah, hold on. Okay, hold on. I got it to work. We're going to start it over. Oh, okay, there it is. There's music if you're in the room. You just can't hear it.
It's lovely music.
Thank you.
Where'd that pick?
Oh, there's no pants in it. And now for America's fastest growing internet game show.
Secular.
Or Solomon. Dang, I didn't even find the right one. Oh, man. I've not lived my life right. All right. Anyway, you've wandered in America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular or Solomon. If this is the first time on the program again, and you're like, boy, that's clunky and terrible. This is how the show goes.
Yeah.
And so I don't want you to think, oh, like, I got to give them a pass. This is the reality of the situation. Yeah. And so if this is not for you, I totally understand.
Yeah. This night is 10 out of 10 so far.
Yeah. We're rocking it. Thrift Store Priest is holding firm in the left-hand corner, and Dawson's keeping the place afloat.
All right. I'm floating.
So here we go. Secular or Solomon. I'm going to give you a proverb, a bit of wisdom, and you're going to tell me whether it is a secular bit of wisdom, and if it's secular, it's come. You're going to tell me the country of origin, or if it is Solomon, I want the. I don't know. You can offer the chapter if you want to. I don't care. Mike, you're on scorekeeping. Yes,
got it. Yep, I'm on scorekeeping.
Okay, all right. Let's see here. Maybe
it's
we'll
not do, looking good for Dawson. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Both yep. Because I'm in charge of the scorekeeping.
Oh no.
Okay, here we go. Dawson, you're up first. Secular or Solomon, don't make a mouse of yourself or else you will be eaten by cats.
Oh, boy.
Don't make a mouse of yourself or else you will be eaten by cats. Secular or Solomon?
Give me Solomon, Steve.
Solomon?
You believe this is a biblical bit of wisdom?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm convinced.
Okay.
Me too. No, Mike, ask me.
Don't make a mouse of yourself or else you will be eaten by cats.
That is secular, and I'm going to guess from Switzerland.
The Swiss have a feline problem.
They're a cheese people.
Cheese people.
Okay. Again, the proverb was, don't make a mouse of yourself or else you'll be eaten by cats. Don't put yourself in the position to be in dangerous circumstances, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Swiss don't know that. Anyway, the answer is secular Germany.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Secular Germany.
I was close.
It does. I don't know.
It does make me wonder, outside of lions, whether there are even any cats in the Bible. Certainly no domestic long hairs.
That not mentioned?
Oh. I'm going to get back to it. I don't know.
Outside of lions.
Not mentioned at all?
I don't know. It could be way off. There's certain parts that I've not read in a while.
You're telling me there's not a barn cat sleeping right? with him when he's born?
Dawson says the cat is implied.
Like when I think of a barn, I think there's got to be a barn cat there.
Yeah, we did, like the Bible didn't even have to mention it. Of course, there's a
like
cat
Mary there. Went to put Jesus in the manger, and the cat won't get out of it.
Too busy chasing that mouse.
It could be a house cat. All right, here we go. Secular or Solomon? Mike, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger.
That is for sure, Solomon. And I'm going to guess Proverbs 8.
Boy, that smacks of someone who's not read Proverbs in a while. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Dawson.
I'm going to Price is Right you, Proverbs 9. I'm going to trust his gut on that one.
Shrewd.
Boy, I mean, Dawson's, he's got the key to this game, Mike.
Dang it.
He's picked up on us so far. He's listening in. That's not true. No one listens to the show. All right. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 15.
Oh.
Proverbs I did Price is Right him.
15. Okay. It's not closest without going over, though. You're still wrong, though. Your arrogance has betrayed you.
No, I got a point there. 9 is closer than 8 is.
You're not the scorekeeper.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, it's 30 to -4.
Oh, is it now?
It's a difficult situation you're in.
There's style points.
I'm sorry. All right, here we go. Secular or Solomon. Dawson, the heaviest rains fall on the house that leaks most.
Oh, secular.
Secular, country of origin.
That's Australia.
Mm.
Down under. It's always been
bold answer.
I mean,
poor construction in Australia, according to Dawson.
Absolutely.
Okay. Here we go, Mike. The heaviest rains fall on the house that leaks most. Secular Solomon.
That's definitely secular.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And from the Congo.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo?
They've since independentized.
Yeah.
Are they really?
Unknown to me.
Unknown to you.
Geography and world political situations are neither things that are on Mike's bingo card.
Talk to me about the internets.
They've come out with a Pabst Red Ribbon. Okay. The heaviest rains fall on the house that leaks most. Good day, mate. It's not. It is secular China.
China.
Is the Congo? It is not. Dang it.
No.
Okay, he prizes righted me on geography as well.
Yeah, I did. Dang. I just covered more space.
He was closer for sure.
Dang it.
Although China is a bit of a cheat answer given its size. China and Russia, if you're going to prizes right someone on geography, those are the options.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, here we go. Secular Solomon. Mike, do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Secular Solomon.
Come on, Solomon. Proverbs 9. Solid.
Dawson, do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Secular Solomon.
I am most definitely provoked. Proverbs 10.
Proverbs 10. Hey. Sticking with what works.
Hey, yep. This man is a cheap imitation of a man guessing.
Absolutely not.
He merely waits till I throw a guess out and then bests me.
He's the Lucent Technologies of his generation.
I wish I owned a white glove. We would do.
Okay, do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. It is indeed Solomon, Ecclesiastes 7.
Oh, you didn't even know that was a book.
Nope. Saw the look on my face.
Ecclesiastes.
I've only met one Ecclesiastes in my life, let alone a couple.
Yeah, right. They rarely get together. Yeah.
I thought that was the... Isn't that a tendon in my foot?
What?
The Achilles tendon? No.
If you have an Ecclesiastes in your foot, you're the only man, and someone has put it in there nefariously.
Hey, it's time to hit the internet, boys. The Ecclesiastes foot.
All right, secular or Solomon?
Dawson.
Yep. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion.
Well, that's most definitely secular. But...
Country of origin?
That's from here. That's my hometown.
Okay.
U.S. That's it.
A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion in Pleasantville. Mike?
I'm also going to agree it's secular.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, stop it.
I don't believe you.
This feels like an Italian proverb to me.
There are so many fools in Italy. For not listening to this program. Am I right? Okay. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. These two fellows in the room have missed the earmark of a Solomon proverb, which is the presence of the word fool. Proverbs 18:2.
Dang it.
If there's a fool to be had, Solomon is after him. That's one of the rules of the road.
Yeah, I thought it was a trick one. What was the tail end of that one?
A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion.
That's where I don't think I ever recall reading the word opinion in the Bible.
Mm.
That's where it threw me.
Yeah, you got blinded. You think there's too many cats in there.
Do you ever look at words in a sentence and I'm like, this seems like a new word. Yeah. Opinion doesn't make me feel like it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, like you stare at it and you're like, I don't know where you came from.
That's got to be newer. They added that.
I don't use new words.
Solomon also doesn't speak English. Just to clarify. Opinion. It's a new one.
Holy cow. That was Eastern Bloc Russia at best.
Here we go. Secular Solomon. Mike, you can't chew with someone else's teeth.
Excuse me?
You can't chew with someone else's teeth. Secular or Solomon?
I'm going to go secular. Also, who's a thiever of teeth?
This doesn't lack cultural insensitivity. Go ahead, Mike.
Lebanon.
The Lebanese, they've always been a tooth people. All right, Dawson, you can't chew with someone else's teeth. Secular or Solomon?
I hope it's secular. Mm. And let's go Iceland.
Mm. Bold.
Mm-hmm.
Bold.
They don't even need them. you can't chew with someone else's teeth. It is secular Israel.
Yeah.
Israel.
That's pretty much Lebanon, modern day Lebanon.
I don't.
Hey, isn't an Israel proverb pretty much biblical wisdom?
I wouldn't say that. That seems to be a lot of the contention that Jesus has with the Jews of the day.
Right. I've joined a rough crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Understood.
All right. Here we go. Secular Solomon Dawson. Even in laughter, the heart may ache, and rejoicing may end in grief.
Ooh. Let's say that's most. I think that's Solomon.
Okay.
Hmm. Go ahead, spin the wheel. Do you know how many chapters are in Proverbs? Be careful, my friend, if you go too high. Go too high.
76. These sounds like the later ones.
You'll show your cards.
What's the one? Cornelations?
Ecclesiastes. The foot book. Is that what you mean?
Book. Coinulations.
Okay, I'm going to help you. It's either Proverbs or Ecclesiastes. These are your two options.
Yeah, there we go. Keely's foot.
It was said by a Cornish game hen who had had three drinks too many and confronted an uncle who never gave her a birthday present.
They sent me another rosary.
Even in laughter, the heart may ache and rejoicing may end in grief. Secular Solomon.
I'm going to go Ecclesiastes 2. Standard. I got a bookmark. Says the exact same thing.
All right. Even in laughter, the heart may ache, and rejoicing may end in grief. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 14:13.
Dang it. Well, it was a cheap bookmark.
I could have had it wrong.
All right. Here we go.
It's also in Hebrew.
Secular or Solomon. Hey, if you're playing live on the YouTube, go ahead and put your score there in the chat so I can kind of see how things are going on over there.
Yeah, what's our score?
Right now, I'm up 102 to 14.
Dawson.
14. Dawson, 14.
I would love to know how I got 14 points.
Most of them were sympathy points. Sympathy. For whatever foot condition you have.
Yeah. I'll be honest, you were trying to chew with someone else's teeth. And that's what got you into this situation. Here we go. Mike, secular Solomon, a bad workman blames his tools. A bad player at secular versus Solomon blames the scorekeeper. A bad workman blames his tools. Mike, secular Solomon.
Secular and Chile.
Yeah. Chile.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Nope. Is this going to be inappropriate? You keep it. No. Seriously, someone from Chile listens.
I got it.
My friends. Don't say this thing.
Don't say these things about me. You give me a bed and a slap in the face.
Mike, we're moving on from you. Dawson, a bad workman blames his tools.
I think that's secular.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which country do you think has bad workmen?
Which country?
Oh, careful. You're on thin ice, bro.
The Bosnians are a lazy people.
Say Liverpool.
A specific town.
Yep.
Who currently had an attack today.
Today?
It comes with the chair. Dan Hudson does that same thing. Yeah. I asked for a country. That's all I want. He's like, I don't know, Chicago. Or like the Indian Ocean by a man who's passed out in a canoe. Yep. All right. So England?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. I guess secular. That's where they're putting Liverpool nowadays.
A bad workman blames his tools is indeed secular England.
No. Yeah, I'm so late.
Yes.
I'll never hear the end of this. This is outrageous.
Get that man a Charleston chew. That was a heck of a deal.
Liverpool just won one over on you.
It's too bad that happened to be the reverse point question. It was actually worth negative points.
No, it wasn't. Dead or alive.
Dude. How unfortunate.
Yeah. You rolled snake eyes, my friend.
They don't call the game craps for nothing. Yeah. All right. Secular Solomon Dawson, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones.
Dries up the bones?
Yep.
Those poor bones.
Cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. Secular Solomon.
Solomon.
Okay.
I don't got a book for you.
No.
Nope. I don't.
No. I'm still glowing from my Liverpool win.
Give me a New Testament.
No.
No. Solomon's an old... listen here. Okay. Hey, if you're listening, I'll just mute...
That's what I meant.
Mute the computer for just a second on your phone. Just me and Dawson talking. Dawson, I gave you... There's two books, man. It's Proverbs or Ecclesiastes. That's it.
Nope.
You get one of those two. You can't... You fished in a sewage pond when there was a lake of fish right in front of you.
Genesis.
Two fishes here.
It is the chair.
Right. Okay, you can come back on now. We got that straightened out. Okay, no book. A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones.
He guessed the wrong book.
No, I didn't.
Include his guess. He said Genesis. After he offered up the whole New Testament. Of which Solomon had been dead for thousands of years.
I tried to be a pal. I feel like I'm using someone else's teeth.
I'm going Solomon.
Okay.
Chapter 18.
A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 17.
Whoa.
17.
So I was on the dot.
I guess Genesis, I guess that's a little low. The numerical value system on the completely wrong book is hard to identify.
All right, here we go. Secular or Solomon. Dawson. Wait. Mike, here we go. Last one. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly.
Oh, that's Solomon.
Secular or Solomon? Solomon?
Solomon, Proverbs 17.
Okay, Proverbs 17.
Same chapter as last one.
Okay, Dawson, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Secular Solomon?
Folly. But dog, we were just talking about how cats aren't in the Bible. So why would dog's vomit
house,
be in there?
House cats for sure. Lions definitely are in.
Yeah. You know what's in the Bible? Fools and folly.
That is true.
Come on.
But also, the Bible's been around for a bit. And I'm pretty sure other people have picked up that lingo from them.
The conspiracy that you're trying to put forth is maddening. You don't think it is?
I'm going to say secular.
Bold.
Okay. Yeah, bold. And give me... I like chili. I like that from
like
earlier.
To eat?
Nope.
The country.
Like place. Yep, the country.
Chile.
Oh, Chile.
Not Chile.
As an aside, I love toast.
Yeah, toast!
0 parts of the show about my eating likes, and that changes now.
Also, Chile. All right. Here we go. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 26. Final scores, Mike.
Total came out. It was a barn burner, but I pulled ahead at the end with a score of 1,004.
Oh, wow.
And then Dawson, he really fell off there, and he was at negative 37.
Oh, no, I doubled my points for getting on the nose with Liverpool.
If you're contesting authority, you're now down at negative 54. Right. Oh, please accept your defeat graciously.
It's like a dog returning to his vomit. All right, let's see. Maybe you. How did you do? Go ahead and post that in the chat on the YouTube, or hit us up on the Life with Beth complaint line 515-517-0085. Call or text. I don't care about the rest of your day or anything. Don't be like, hey, I enjoyed gardening with the hubby today. 27. I don't care. Just tell me how you did on secular versus Solomon.
Yes, and let me know if you also guess Liverpool.
Yeah, and see if you,
yeah. I know we were all thinking it when we heard it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate it happened on that negative round thing, but like otherwise, that was wild.
Yeah, it was. I would have been really excited for you. You just, man, you played the lotto at the wrong time.
Scandalously bad luck. All right, I tell you what, Mike, let's give out some advice. Oh, wait, did you want to do Pope style? You want to sit on it?
Nah, we'll sit on it.
Okay, let's do some advice.
All right. Dear Life from the Path. How do you handle a friend who never stops talking? My longtime friend has always been a good storyteller, but as we become older, she hijacks every conversation when we get together. She's oblivious to verbal or body cues that the rest of us are done with the conversation that she has chosen and would like to move on. If someone is able to get a word in edgewise, she immediately returns to the previous subject. I come away from gatherings feeling angry and frustrated. Is there a way to address this without blowing up a lifelong relationship?
No. No. Here's the thing. Like, this is, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did we, I can't remember, I didn't quite catch it. Did we get the sense that, like, she's tried to, she tries to, like, casually dissuade this thing, and it just keeps getting pulled back?
This is where I'm going to push back a little, but, like, she says she's oblivious to verbal or body cues that the rest of us are done with the conversation. I would like to see these obvious body cues.
Yeah, how obvious can a body cue be?
Like, be like,
come off. Show them the shepherd's hook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing, is that, like, I actually think there's an element of this where if you've been friends with this person this long, like, you gotta take the good with the bad, right? Some people just
some people don't stop.
Yeah, yeah, it's just not going to change about them. And there could be an insecurity in them, so they're, like, trying to redraft the conversation back to themselves. They could just be arrogant people, like, but whatever. You've been friends with them for so long, there must be some redeeming quality about them. So one, I do want you to, like, put it in perspective. Their whole personality is not this thing. So just be careful that you don't overreact here. I will say, though, if you're friends with them, like, honestly, you care about them, they care about you, you can say the, like, not the harsh thing, but the clear thing. Hey,
you should
man.
Be able to say that and them not.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they way overreact, then, like, they're not great friends to you. So I know this feels a little bit, we talked about this when we talked about relationship stuff, like, hey, maybe you reach out and you try to, I don't know, you see someone you want to be friends with or someone that you want to date or something, and you approach them. If they react harshly or whatever, they weren't good friends and they're not someone you want to date. So, like, okay.
You learned a thing.
Yeah, you learned a thing. And so, like, if she's, like, if you're in a situation where, like, hey, if you failed to mention it, you're expecting to get subtle cues, she doesn't seem like a subtle person.
No.
So just jump right in there and say, hey, man, this is weird. It feels like this thing's over and you keep on going. Like, do you notice that you're doing that?
Okay. And to be fair, we give the same advice out to wives all the time who are like, my husband is not picking up on my cues. Noted. He's not gonna. Just say the thing.
Yeah.
Like, say the thing that you want to have happen, right? Like, don't, like, bat your eyes or, like,
don't beat around the bush.
Don't beat around the bush. Like, and this is, it's not always dudes, but it's classic dude behavior, right? Like, if you want them to, and they will be happy to do it. If they could just figure out, they're oblivious to most things and they walk around in a world just merely mystified of what is actually happening. And so, like, if you're like, I would really like the laundry done today, you're like, hot dang, I know what I'm supposed to do today. This is going to be a great day. And because the opposite end is, like, the end of the day happens and goes, I noticed that you didn't even go pick up the food. And you're like, what happened? I had no idea I was even responsible for that.
Yeah.
Now, is this a gal-to-gal conversation?
This is a gal-to-gal conversation currently.
Is it a group of gals?
Sounds
at
like
the table?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd imagine, yeah.
They should be able to tell each other to shut the F up if they need to.
Yeah, straight on. Just send it.
I don't know. That's got to be a weird atmosphere if you can't, though. Especially if being in a friend group for that long.
Yes.
Not having that comfortability with a friend to be like, hey, we've moved on.
Like, there's some things that, like, if you were willing to just rip it out there, that, like, people don't forget. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, when you say, look, you're over, like, no one can get a word in edgewise. And, like, it depends on how secure they are in themselves, right? If they're fairly insecure, they'll shrink back and say nothing, right? As a complete, like, opposite way of acting to be like, well, if they think I talk too much, maybe I just won't talk at all, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it depends on the maturity level of your friend.
Yep.
And the maturity level of your friendship is probably the right task.
Yeah, but what is staggeringly unfair is to get frustrated with someone who you've given no opportunity to actually mend.
What about the verbal cues, the shepherd's hook?
That's obviously, like, your belief that, don't presume upon that. Like, clarity is clarity. Like, hey, they're ignoring my verbal cues. How do you know they saw them? How do you know they took, you know, is it like, all kinds of stuff where, and we've talked about this before, where, like, I just don't notice a thing. My wife's like, hey, you walked by this thing 4 times. I couldn't have told you I walked by it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I straight up do not even recall that. And so that what it is, it starts to assign a motivation to people. Like, you take what is something that needs to be resolved, and then now it becomes a personality issue that you've assigned to them. Look at, not only do they not, like, refuse to stop talking, but now they're ignoring the fact where it's obvious that all of us want you to stop talking. Okay, you've created 2 problems. They may both be true, but you've not taken any steps to actually affirm that. So why don't you check with it first? Give people the chance to act the way that they should by being clear instead of presuming that they've got some sort of weird attitude about it. Yeah. Like, you've not been a good friend if you spent even a half a second being irritated with them without mentioning it to them first.
Yes, that's probably true. Right? Like, if to assume that your half-baked measures should have done the job and you have yet to do the full bake. All you have to do is say something. And then you go, I communicated clearly on the boundaries that I wanted to have set and where I think that we're at. And then a continued push forward into ignoring that. Then, yeah, now you got a conflict here. But like, if you did not mention it or you didn't sack up and just go, hey, man, like, you got to stop talking for a minute so I can get a word in here.
Yeah.
But that's completely unfair to be mad at somebody without saying something about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could even gateway, like saying, like, have you noticed our social cues? Like, have you noticed us, like, our faces?
That's true.
You keep going. Like, I could gateway you into, like, maybe a little bit more subtle of approach.
Right.
Rather than just, hey.
Oh, yeah.
We're done.
Yeah. You could set this up as almost a comedy. Like, here's the deal, man. Once you get firing up the engine, that engine don't seem to slow down, so I can talk in here. So from now on, when I take like three giant winks with this noise, that means it's time for you to slow the trailer a little bit.
Yeah. This is me. I do that in this room. Yeah. I just get going on some sort of weird, like I'm just talking and talking and talking, and I will continue to do so. And someone has to stop me. And like, I have to be reminded, hey, you've been talking way too long about it.
It's usually me. I usually do this.
And it's usually Mike. And so, but here's the thing. I will, to reiterate though, like, it is not, you should, we're talking about different ways in which you could approach it, but like, again, you shouldn't even consider approaching it in a harsh way, because why are you being harsh? If you mentioned it and it was clear and they kept doing it, I get some level of irritation. But like, if you did not address it, you have no right to be harsh with anybody. I will say that think of all your relationships. You get mad at your boyfriend, girlfriend, you get mad at your kids or something. Like, you hair triggered someone. Like, I don't know. Did you talk to them first? Did they have a chance to get it right? Or did you just irritate it out of the gate because you're like, oh, it's been, you know, this is the fifth time this week. Okay, did you mention it times one to four, or wait till it stacked up and then blew up at someone? I'm just saying, like, be fair to people.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so the question was, is there a way to address this without blowing up a lifelong relationship? Secular says, I don't think there is. You stated that your longtime friend has always been a good storyteller. Is it possible that, as you all are growing older, that she has begun having cognitive problems? It may also be a reason why she's not picking up on social cues.
I wouldn't reach there first.
Holy cow. Like, you know, it's talk about a broad swath, right? Like, they just get on a fire and they won't stop talking. And you're like, do you have a mental disorder? Yeah. Or are you just real old? Gosh, that's rough.
This is terrible advice.
She continues, would her spouse, if she has one, or her children, if she has any, have noticed any changes? Start asking. And if the response you receive is that this is just the way she is, for the sake of your sanity, see her less often.
Okay, yeah. That's what I want to find out. If, like, subversively, my friend has reached out to my family to see if I have a mental disorder. This is terrible advice. Terrible.
Holy cow.
I hasn't even told him to stop talking.
Right? Didn't gosh, even bring it up. Right. And all of a sudden, okay? We're done with you. Gosh. Okay, one more. Ready?
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Nope. Nope. Yes. Dear Life from the Past. My late husband and I were married 38 years when we finally went to marriage counseling. I found out then that he had slept with my sister early in our marriage. I had suspected he'd also had an affair with his uncle's wife. They were very close in age. Holy cow. This too was confirmed in counseling. My sister was recently home because of our mom's health, and it was a struggle to be in the same hospital room with her. As far as the other gal, there are a few occasional family get-togethers which I avoid because of her. I need help. How do I deal with this after all these years? Wow.
I need a breakdown of the family tree.
Okay. So just to recap, my late husband. So this man's already passed on.
Yeah,
they were married for 38 years. Early in the marriage, apparently, he had cheated on his wife with the wife's sister.
But she never knew about it until after he passed?
Until counseling, which was assumedly later in life.
Oh.
And he had also had an affair with his uncle's wife. This dude. This is all you... Okay, and continuing. The sister comes in to visit every once in a while, and she's having a hard time being in the same room as this gal. And the other lady, on occasional family get-togethers, she likes to avoid altogether. And she needs help. How do I deal with this after all these years?
I think the unfortunate reality is the people who are most aggrieved in situations like this have to advocate for their own peace. And it, unfortunately, this is the part that's difficult, is it is often, you're not, where are you going to find it? You're only going to find it in forgiveness in this thing. It's the only place you get it, because you can't deal, the husband's dead.
Yeah.
Right. And but it came out in counseling. So like, presumably you had a chance to talk about it while he was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But like, what exactly could anybody say or do to set any of these things right? They couldn't. And it's so long ago, it's even going to feel weird to try to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking of decades ago. And so like, the practical reality is twofold, and it seems like they're going to be in two separate sides of things, but they're actually very tightly bundled together, is you were mistreated. You were taken advantage of, you were lied to and deceived by multiple people who were close to you. And that sucks. It sucks to find out about it. I don't, that frankly, there's some of me that could, if I was being disassociated from it, I'm almost kind of grateful of it. Because like, think of how you're feeling now and repaint that over the last 40 years or so.
Yeah, right.
And so that's not trying to get you to put rose colored glasses on. I'm telling you, like, there is actually some level of gift in that. But you got to know it before the man died. But here's the thing. The you're not going to find, there's no other place to find peace. Yelling at the sister's not going to bring you any peace. Being pissed at the uncle or his wife isn't going to bring you peace. The guy and your husband's already dead. The only thing that will actually bring you any resolution and sense of peace is for you to take control of this situation and seek conversation and ultimately forgiveness and to extend it. And this is why Jesus advocates for this very type of thing. It's like, there will be all kinds of ways in which the world, the vase got broken, and you can try to glue it back together in all kinds of different ways, and it will never quite be the same thing. And so, but this is the path of which you actually end up with something greater than what you had before. And you'll find this in people who can actually reconcile their marriages off of something like, well, there's a cheating or an adultery or like some sort of deceit. The marriage can come back stronger because you ended up like having to do something so raw as forgive, where it is just impossible to think that you could.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recognize fully that is a hard answer, but I do very much believe that is actually the answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it seems to be, it feels like it would need to be delivered in exactly that way too, because like, the quick answer is you need to forgive them, but like, delivered that way, it lacks all the nuance and weight that got us here, right? And so like, having that same advice to somebody, like delivered with the same amount of empathy and care for the situation that got us here, is the way that those words are heard. And so like, that there's a real delicate balance here in not allowing to continue to swim in filth merely because you were thrown in there. You don't have to stay there if you don't want to. And like, it gets to be that big of a truth that says like, you didn't create this sewage pond, like you didn't contribute to it, but that is where you are. And you do have an option, and it is not a pull up by a bootstraps kind of thing. You're basically saying, I'm going to clean this pond up. Like, mm-hmm. So I'm not going to just leave it, because what you're going to find out is like, the stink is still on you as you left. Right? Like, we need to clean the thing. And like, this is obviously where Jesus shines, because this is exactly what he does. Your heart without him is incapable of this level of forgiveness, because you can't do it, because your kingdom matters to you, right? When his kingdom matters and when he's calling the shots, this level of forgiveness is attainable. But when the only thing you have is to protect and glorify your own kingdom, you will never clean that pond. And you will bite and fight and claw at everything around you to make sure that your kingdom comes out on top. And it's a lie. It will never come out on top.
Yeah.
You will just be the king of the swamp.
Yeah. I will tell you, a middle finger will cover up a wound, but it will not heal it. It'll feel good. It'll, or make it feel like it went away, but it won't ever heal it. It'll, yeah. And so like, again, I know it's hard. I said a hard thing. And like, there's to your point, I think there is do you get to express to the sister like that you're hurt? Well, of course. Like, part of forgiveness, there's an honesty in forgiveness. Like, it has to be, otherwise it's not actually forgiveness, which means mm-hmm. like, you get to say, look, I was hurt. You can't expect your relationship to your sister to get either repaired or even improved if you're not honest. And like, she needs to respond honestly. And maybe you're going to get the answer you want, and maybe you're going to get a reaction that's defensive and she doesn't want to talk about it. But that's not, but you don't have to carry the weight of her reaction, just like you don't have to carry the weight of your husband's behavior. But the freedom in that is the forgiveness part, regardless of their reaction to it. And so just because I said it, and just because I actually think it's very plainly the way to do that, you need to approach it, doesn't mean it's easy, doesn't mean it's fast, doesn't mean it doesn't take time and healing. All those things are appropriate. And you probably can, I would actually suggest continuing down the counseling or at least a close friend route to like, hey, here's where I'm struggling. I know I'm supposed to forgive. I do forgive. But then today I woke up and I was angry. That's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. Like Jesus gets this perfectly. We're going to struggle in that. I actually think one of the reasons that we get when Jesus tells Peter, hey, you're going to forgive 70 times seven. Like, it's easy to look at that and go, oh, I got to forgive a lot. I kind of get it. Jesus's reaction to what happens to him on the cross sets a bar. So at least we go, oh, my depth of what it looked like to forgive was actually probably still too shallow. Because like we would cut it off. At some point, we just go, yeah, but certainly I'm not supposed to forgive that. But like, I think the relevance for what Jesus points us to is it starts to recognize that lack of forgiveness doesn't just withhold reconciliation with someone else. It will eat your soul because you're not meant to carry grudges that are too big for you. That stuff is too big. It's weight. People's aggrievement, like of how people can harm you, is too big for you. You cannot carry all of that, and it will totally eat your soul. I've got at least 2 to 3 people that are coming to mind that I've like have interactions with this last week or 2 weeks. That their lack of forgiveness has buried their lives for 40 years.
Yeah.
It's eaten them alive. They've broken every relationship. They can't maintain anything solid. Their life is a constant complaint about how they were like hurt. Legitimately hurt.
They were legitimately hurt.
They were legitimately hurt. But like it's been 30 years. It's been 40 years. And their life sucks. And they will never get away from it because they're never going to find like what does your vengeance look like? It's not good. And it won't actually heal anything. It's the only thing that happens when you get the thing you actually want, when you want vengeance upon someone, is you're going to get the guilt that follows.
Yes.
Because your heart, the very heart, the center of you that God created is not designed to go, ha, they got what they deserved. Because at its core, it should recognize in humility, you're not getting what you deserve. How many times have I cheated? How many times have I worked a 30-hour work week and I still got a job?
Yeah.
Right? How many times have I done a thing or like I just cheated or lied or manipulated or took in something I shouldn't have said, something I should have thought more times on, something I shouldn't be like spending my time thinking about, to what consequence? Nothing struck me. Nobody divorced me. Like no friends parted company with me. I still get to over talk on a Christian radio show and my fallibilities. Like in my heart, I know I'd have not had everything I deserve rained upon me. And so at that, I then can humbly interact with the world around me. And so anyway, whatever you think vengeance looks like, it's not what you think it is. It will eat you up just in a different flavor.
Yeah.
And so the forgiveness is the thing.
Okay. Secular says, the question was, how do I deal with this after all these years? Secular says, take back your life. You have nothing to be embarrassed about. Tell your sister and the other woman that you know they slept with your husband. And at the next family get-together, tell the rest of your relatives why you avoided all those previous get-togethers so they don't think they were the reason.
I don't see any value in that.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no reason to, I guess, put all that onto the other family. Especially, I assume they're aware.
Yeah, that kind of news tends to travel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like at the end of the day, all all secular is trying to advise is that you clear the decks with your family. And like, that didn't do anything for you. You basically took this mess and then threw it out into the open so people could shame the people that were involved. And once again, that's vengeance, right?
Yeah,
you're trying to bring shame upon the people who brought mess upon you and like understood why you want to do that. But like, it won't help. It's just like a lot of other things in this world that promise things that it can't deliver on, right? It can't hold ultimate joy. It can hold momentary happy. It does feel cool that someone got their thing. You know what I'm saying? And for like a day or an hour or 2 days. But like by day 3, you're like, we just muddied the swamp even more. Mm-hmm. We didn't do anything here, right? And you don't feel any better. Like God's ways are hard for a human heart, but they are still right. And like you will not walk in freedom acting that way. There will be no deliverance, there will be no joy, and there will be no freedom in continuing to spread mess that was spread on you. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's going to come. And like, think of what it's going to do. Like, okay, you go to the family reunion, you say the thing, and then everyone like shames all those people. And then what, are you going to come to one next year? And now you get this permanent divide and awkwardness. But like for what? For what value? Like, what did you get? It didn't bring your husband back. It didn't make the thing not happen. Like, it just, in fact, it just instituted an annual reminder of the problem. It's dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a dumb solution. It's going to, again, it's going to feel like a Band-Aid middle finger, and it's not going to work. And so don't do it.
Okay.
Hey, you've been listening live from the path. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. We very much appreciate it. I hope you did well on Secular versus Solomon.
Not as good as Dawson.
I thought you did better than Dawson.
Probably not.
Yeah. Go ahead and hit up the... hey, if you want to play any more Secular Solomon, you can go check out the past shows. If you go to lifefromthepath.org and search Secular versus Solomon, or you can also just do it on the YouTube channel, Secular Solomon. Actually, just do Secular. It'll show up. And you can play with some of the... I don't know. Some of the musical guests have been in here playing Secular Solomon.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, just try your hand. I promise, end of the year is my dead last date. I will have the ability for you to play Secular versus Solomon at home. What I'm not sure, it may be like on the website, or I was working on a Roku channel. So that you
Roku
could,
channel?
You could do it on your Roku.
How cool Roku is Roku? Channel. Is it cool still?
Yeah. Yeah. It's still happening.
Oh, yeah.
If Dawson is measuring on whether Roku is cool or not.
I am on the Roku train. I love Roku.
This is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I have it. I actually have the life. It's not out yet. It's not public. But like, I have it working where like you can watch the shows and the clips and stuff. But I'm trying to get Secular versus Solomon to work. Wow. I am doing it at home with very little skill set. And so it might be a while, but sure. I'm working on it.
Well, we'll wait. The masses will have to just
That's what
be
I'm saying.
At bay for a while.
Yeah. You'd have to listen to the past.
I'll be Rokuing in the meantime. Okay.
There we go. It's going to happen. All right. Well, we're going to cut you loose here. Dawson, thanks for coming to the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you guys.
Appreciate you being on the program. Maybe we'll see Dawson here sometime in the future as well. Yeah, and let's see. We're going to be dicey for the next couple weeks. Like, I'm out of town. I don't know. There's like 500 back episodes. I'm sure you can figure out how to use your time wisely by not listening to any of those. But in the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.
Sorry we ruined it, everybody. Yeah.